Blog Talk Radio.
My name is Tracy.
And I'm just plain Bill.
And we're here to literally take the gloves off.
Oh, God. Oh, look out. Here comes the war metaphors.
The war metaphors. You know, it's been a rather interesting weekend. Everybody knows, because unless you're dead, to me, that there was a shooting in Arizona. Some people died, some people lived, some people are seriously injured, and apparently my favorite person in the political world is to blame for it.
Yep.
Even though she was 1,500 miles away and had nothing to say about the matter.
Yep.
The left has taken the gloves off, and I've got to say this, William.
Yep.
That I've always suggested that, you know, the left will always tell you what they are most afraid of by what they spend the most time attacking.
Absolutely, yes.
And right now, for the last 2 years, and especially right now, the left must be just shitting in its pants just by looking at a picture of Sarah Palin. And when she opens her mouth, they just bowels just might be loosening all over the planet. The simple fact of the matter is, the left has said that Sarah Palin has the power of God.
In a way, didn't they? They did.
They did. You know, that her mere presence on a poster is enough to drive the lunatics suicidal into murderous rages.
Yep.
You gotta wonder. Exactly, you know, Obama has got to wish for this kind of power. Really?
Yeah.
Because just about everybody on the right, when they see pictures of Obama, laugh.
Yep.
I mean, frankly.
I do.
He doesn't stir any kind of, response in me other than to laugh. Palin apparently can stimulate the left into complete apoplexy. So I do want to spend some time talking about the shooting on Saturday, but I'm going to take just a slightly different tack at it. So bear with me a moment here.
Okay.
There are several groups of people associated with this attack. And each of them have their role to play in the world, and each of them have been playing a role. I'm going to start off with the shooter and his family. Not the shooter and the victims, shooter and his family. And no, I do not equate his family with the victims, although there are certainly times when family members are the victims when another family member goes off the reservation and does something crazy nuts. You know, Ted Kaczynski's family were victims of Ted Kaczynski. But I don't think that Lundgren's parents are victims for several reasons. One, he lived at home. Two, this man was so deranged that I don't think that anybody could have spent any time with him and not believed he was anything other than deranged. And I hold them somewhat accountable for not getting him some help. There is some evidence starting to flow out that he has been arrested, but he has no criminal record. And that may be because his mother worked for the county And like most small counties in rural parts of the United States, you know, county offices and the sheriff's offices tend to be put in the same building, and there's a lot of interaction between the municipal employees, the sheriff's employees, and police employees. And especially someone that's been working for the county for a very long time, and I understand she was working for the county for decades. So there's every possibility that, you know, family effort kept his criminal activities from becoming a record. If that's the case, and there is at this point beginning to be some evidence to suggest that, then I think that they are going to be somewhat culpable in this area. And because he was arrested and there's no record, it means that the sheriff, Mr. Dupik, is going to own some culpability on this too. So I'm going to put, you know, the shooter and his family in the same level here. These are the culprits. These are the bad parties in here. The second group, well, let's stay with the shooter for a second. It is clear, if you want to read into the face of somebody, that Mr. Lundgren absolutely loves what has happened. If there's any indication that this man is insane, it's his mugshot picture, because it was definitely mugging for the camera.
Mm-hmm.
So it is clear that this isn't just a lunatic's rage. This was exactly what has been suggested, a planned attempt at mass murder. And, you know, they're going to plead him out, and he's going to be diagnosed as schizophrenic or something else otherwise deranged, you know, and we're going to have to deal with the fact that he's never going to spend, you know, the rest of his life in prison or face the death penalty because of it. So better that we put this off the pages as far as that's concerned, the sooner the better as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm.
Back to the sheriff in a moment. Now, the victims and their families. You heard it. You saw it. I know there's lots of people talking about it. This idea that, you know, after the shooting, the right was praying for the victims and the left was praying for the culprits. People have got to pay attention to the fact that there's, you know, lots of victims in here, lots of stories, and I'm not going to focus on any one of them, you know, because someone was more well-known or somebody held a position of power. The fact of the matter is that, you know, these people died, these people were shot and wounded because of where they were, when they were, and what they were doing. And, you know, they were all victims, and their families are going to suffer for, you know, in some cases, decades, you know, with the
mm-hmm.
consequences of these acts.
Mm-hmm.
Now, those sets of people right there, the shooter and his family and the victims, realistically speaking, should be a minor story that by Monday morning, yesterday, should be pretty much relegated to page 16 of the Arizona newspapers.
Yeah.
Certainly not page 1 of the New York Times. That's not to minimize the issue with the victims and stuff like that, but in fact it is a very local issue. It's not going to have any impact on people here in San Diego or people in Chicago or people in New York, you know, or people up in Hayford. It's just not going to have that kind of an impact. It shouldn't have that kind of an impact. It's a local story. That's where it should stay. Now, let's get to the responsible parties here. And what I mean by responsible parties is the government people. The sheriff, the local police. You know, I understand why the FBI is involved in this. We've got a federal court judge, you know, and a sitting congresswoman involved in the shooting. So the FBI is going to get involved with it, simply on that level alone. However, Sheriff Dupik, Dupshit, Doofus, pick a name, has decided that he's going to make this political. Now, this shooting happened at 10:45 or so Saturday morning, and his press conference was at about 1 o'clock. It was about just over 2 hours, and he's getting into politics right off the bat. Mm-hmm. Now, it's not just him. Everybody that was anybody, politician-wise, you know, started opening their mouth and making all kinds of comments. Now, I understand that there's a specific mentality that it goes that's associated with politicians. But for the most part, it appears to me that by Saturday afternoon, most politicians were afraid that this story was going to run away from them and leave them behind. It was going to convert all the wonderful attention that the politicians were getting last week with the House and the Senate resuming power, that this was going to threaten their news cycles. And so they had to get into this. You know, heaven forbid something else other than politics should dominate our airwaves. And this is the place where I'm most pissed off, not just at the politicians, but at the media too. Okay? This has nothing to do with shooting. This has nothing to do with victims. This has everything to do with politics. And the desire of politicians to keep their name and their interests in front of the public eye as much as possible. Now, unfortunately for us, the media has Barack Obama in their beholden eye, and so they're quite willing to continue to maintain the idea that the most important thing that's going on in this country right now is whatever the goddamn politicians say it is.
Yes.
And you know what? That's bullshit. You know, to the people in Atlanta and the East Coast, you know, they're getting socked by a winter storm at this point. You know, right now, the story of the day is the snowstorm. That's not a story for San Diego or San Francisco. It's a story for Atlanta and Charlotte, D.C. and such. So, you know, it's a situation where the politicians have just got to keep it, you know, the focus on them. And frankly, I'm not interested in it. I am not interested in this story anymore simply because it is no longer about the victims or the shooter or the event. It's all about the politicians. And I'm done with it. I'm not interested in giving the politicians any more of my attention than is absolutely necessary. When I heard that Cantor was saying that there would be no legislation done in Congress, man, I fired off an email to him. I hit him on Twitter. I hit every, you know, representative that got on the Twitter and said that there was going to be no thing. I said, what the hell for? Exactly. Tell me why this shooting should stop the government dead in its tracks. There's no reason whatsoever for the government of the United States to shut down, for all practical purposes, the power, the legislation, the governing of this country to be shut down simply because some lunatic in a small town in Arizona, you know, goes off the reservation and gets nuts, you know, on a bunch of people. I find it incredible dereliction of duty. That's not what they're supposed to be doing. There's no reason to have stopped Congress's dead in its tracks because of this thing, because of this shooting. So despite the fact that the politicians have in fact decided that this story is all about them, they have decided that because it's a story about them, they can't do anything except for deal with the politics rather than the work that they're supposed to be in Washington for. And I'm pissed off that the Republicans are the ones that are pushing this. They're the ones that shut things down, and it was ridiculous to do so. It just royally pissed me off. Now, the whole thing about the politicians is they're self-serving assholes. Big deal. Nothing new there. I'm not really surprised at their actions. I am somewhat, only in a minor way, surprised at the media. Because the media likes to be the story. And what they've done is they've allowed the politicians to become the story. And I've never seen the media quite as subservient to the politicians as they have been in this event. You know, the politicians are driving the story, not the media. And I don't understand that. The media doesn't usually like to give up its limelight quite that quickly. For me, it's kind of a situation where the media, which has abdicated its responsibility years ago, has even abdicated its own self-interest in this regard. So I'm totally done with it. Anytime the story came onto the news today, if I was listening to the news, I turned it off. Wasn't interested in hearing any more discussion about it. First of all, we know the shooter's a lunatic. He went off the deep end. Politicians are trying to ascribe blame for it outside of Arizona, which is ridiculous. You know, and politicians and media have conspired, and I use that term kind of loosely because I don't think it was an active thing, to make sure that this is all about the politicians and have nothing to do with the shooting or the media or anything else. I'm done with it. And I think that's a record. I think I have gotten completely and totally disinterested in the story in just over 3 days.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
A national story that is, yep, as far as I'm concerned, I'm done with. Finished. And nothing else. There's nothing else of interest involved in it. I do not accept the premise that the left has established that there's some major violence in our discussions going on. And it's bullshit. I said it over the weekend. I'll say it again. You know, if political talk has this much power to drive the lunatics over the edge, then frankly we need to eliminate violence from TV, from movies, from books, from video games, from the internet, from YouTube, you know, because apparently we cannot be trusted as a society to govern our own selves and our own people. It is this idea that, the Muslims have basically created an environment where if you say anything bad about Islam, they're going to have a riot. And so nobody wants to have a riot. You know, if you say something bad about Islam or Muslims, then Islam is going to, you know, put a death threat on you. So they're trying to stifle any complaints or comments about Islam. Well, this is exactly what the left is doing right now. They tried to do it with Obama in the campaign. We talked about this last week, that at this point, the only one that can call, you know, Obama, you know, a moron right now is Sarah Palin. And get away with it. Everyone else has got their balls hanging on their mirrors and their rearview mirror in the car. If it's even that close. The left is trying to shut down conversation that's not so watered down. I frankly said it, that I'm done with it. I'm not going to censor myself in any regard at this point, especially not to be careful that, you know, I might set off some moron with a gun in hand. Frankly, the only people that I was for taking gun in hand and shooting people are the people that take guns in hand and shoot people. Nobody else.
Or knives. Yeah.
No.
Or whatever.
It's just, you know, I'm done with both sides of that. I'm done with the conversation. Are going to drive what's going on at this point? I'm just not going to deal with it. That's it. So, as far as this show is concerned, I've used about 15 minutes. That's about what I wanted to use. I am going to give you free rein if you have something you want to add to that, if you want to put your own 2 cents or 15 minutes into it, feel free.
Well, I don't know that I have 15 minutes. There are two concrete developments that have come out of this whole incident. Having to do with legislation. And the usual suspects have determined that, one, our First Amendment rights need to be curtailed because of this violent speech, and two, our Second Amendment rights need to be curtailed because of this violent speech. Both of those concepts do violence to the Constitution. They do violence to our, American psyche. They do violence to the idea that we are a people that are governed by a constitution, and until the Supreme Court says, and yes, they do get it wrong, but until the Supreme Court says, oh gosh, we've got to take some action here, all of those calls for First and Second Amendment curtailments are bogus, suspect. And you need to look very carefully at those people who propose them. One of the people that proposes them, Representative Clyburn, is quite frankly proven a liar. And yet, he wants to come up with, as a response to this, the old FCC, what's the term? What's the one that they did back in the 70s about speech on television and radio?
Fairness Doctrine?
Ah, yes, the Fairness Doctrine. Could not get that out. That is absolutely abhorrent. Now, why would they want to do that? Because their ideas have no currency. I mean, the answer to speech, as what Justice Frankfurter said, was more speech. If you run across an idea in the public discourse that you disagree with, then you need to state and articulate your reasons why you disagree with it. Eventually, we will come to an understanding of the problem, and we will determine what needs to be done. But until that happens, if your first intent and if your first inclination is, I'm going to curtail someone's speech because my ideas cannot gain traction and currency, then you are bankrupt. You have absolutely no moral standing, and frankly, you are a danger to the Republic. The idea of curtailing someone else's speech because someone has abused speech someplace is ludicrous. And frankly, as Americans, we ought not to stand for it, period. So, those are the two concrete things that have been talked about. Both of them are bankrupt ideas and ought not to see any further light of day. They will, but they ought not to. But the only way to counter them is with factual argument, is to say, look, here's why this is wrong. Here's why this doesn't work. And then carry the day with the argument. That's all I had on that one. Now, the only other thing I will say is this. Representative Giffords, a Democrat, but apparently a sensible Democrat, is expected to recover. There is some speculation, at least on Twitter, as to if that's fully recover or simply live. I don't think any of us have any details as to what the severity of that injury was and how that will affect her cognitive abilities. My hope and prayer is that it will not, that she will make a full recovery, and then she will be back doing her duties as an elected congresswoman. That's my hope. As for those that died, they're all tragedies. The one that hit me the hardest, I think, was the 9-year-old girl born September the 11th, 2001. Her father said she came in on a tragedy and she went out on a tragedy. And yes, I think that's true. That's all I got, kid.
My general emotional response to the shooting was pretty, I don't know what you want to call it, unemotional.
Okay.
I treated it pretty much like, the simple fact that, 30,000 people kill themselves or get killed in this country every year. Why is any one particular person to be held up to us as a tragedy more than any other? Children die, horrible deaths in this country every day. Adults are shot in this country every day. Adults are shot and killed every day. Unless I'm willing to suggest that I should have an emotional response to all of them, which I'm not so much willing to have an emotional response just because somebody says I should have an emotional response, because this is different. This was a more terrible response. So, for me, many, many people called me, a cold and mean person. Now, you heard me say it. I'm a dark soul.
Yeah.
Well, I just had no general emotional response to the act itself. It happens a lot in this country. Two guys driving in the car down the street, open fire at a bunch of people standing on a porch in a house. The only person that dies is the kid that was standing in the doorway trying to figure out what all the people were doing on their porch. If you're going to take the 9-year-old's death as, a serious tragedy, I can probably, find news stories for about another 10 or 20 9-year-olds. So I'm just not there. It just doesn't have that kind of resonance with me. Which means it's easy for me to turn off that stuff and not spend a whole lot of attention to it. Now, I did spend a fair amount of time this weekend dealing with the fact that, the left was going batshit crazy on the right. I would suggest they were going off half-cocked, but they don't even have that much to be able to say. They're shooting, pulling a trigger on a gun that not only had no bullets in it, it didn't even have a chamber in it. So I'm not, just not there. It just didn't have that kind of impact on me. And the more that came out about the 9-year-old, the more I'm sitting there going, oh, this is great. This is gonna be worth at least 3 or 4 days all by itself. So I'm just, sorry, not interested. Much more interested in the things that you cited as far as what Congress is going to do with things.
Mm-hmm.
I am, if you're wanting to ban, ammunition from guns, because guns kill people, then I think we should ban gasoline.
There's a thought.
That way we solve all the problems with cars killing people. It's just dumb. Let's ban matches because people smoke cigarettes.
Well, not the one that I would have picked. I would have thought about arson first, but that's okay.
It is that simplistically stupid. And it's about time somebody starts calling these Congress critters that want to do this stuff with that kind of simplistically stupid point of view. And the ones that want to curtail speech, the local radio show today opened up with a set of commercials of Jefferson and Adams in the 1800 election season, and some of the words that were published between the two of them. In the publishers. And I've read it before. I mean, you know, our discourse in this country is practically, you know, schoolboy aged compared to what was going on, you know, between 1790 and the late 1800s. You know, those people were damn near vicious.
Oh, yeah.
You know, as far as what they said to each other. So, you know, I'm for me, it's kind of a situation where our discourse hasn't gotten anywhere near as bad as it was 150 years ago. So, you know, I could care less.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know me. I have no problems with offending anybody. So if anybody wants to say, well, you know, you can't say that, that's offensive. Bullshit. I can say
yeah,
it because
I can.
It is offensive.
Yeah, watch me.
So,
yes, indeed.
So we've managed to tie up the fact that for the first half of our show, we talked about an event that, at least for me, I'm done with already and shouldn't have any impact on the future of this country. It certainly will have an impact on the future of the people that were involved in it. I'm hoping Mr. Dupik, you know, retires formally in 2012 when he's up for re-election.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping pretty much nothing else happens as far as, you know, legislation is concerned. You know, and if the Congresswoman recovers, great. If she doesn't recover, oh well. You know, nothing else should be going on from that point. So, you know, sorry, I had the same opinion about the OJ trial. Did you hear? Don't care. He's not guilty. Don't care.
Yeah,
he murdered
right.
Those people. Don't care.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure his family cares and her family cares and whatever his name's family cares, you know, and the neighbors care, but, you know, beyond that, I don't know why anybody else should care. So that's why I am here. You know, the shooter and his family, they care. The victims and their families care. The neighborhoods care. Everyone else, shut the fuck up. Let's move on.
That's fine. With some exceptions, the Jeffrey Dahmers and the, I don't know, this Jared Lee guy, with those types of exceptions, every person's death impacts us. Now, does it impact us to the point that we drop everything else and we go attend to that and we march on Washington and we do all the other things that we're capable of doing? No. But at some level it does in fact impact us. And I suppose for myself, the death of that 9-year-old was more a representation of all of the horrible waste of life that occurs every day, and she simply personified it. I mean, you're right. Her death is no more impactful, is no more horrendous than some child in Bangladesh that starves to death. I don't know, something like that. But the fact of the matter is that she somehow, for me, personified that. And so, yeah, that hit me. Do I have a quarrel with people that doesn't happen to? No, not particularly. On the other hand, you know, the fact that they died is a loss to all of humankind. loss might have been, I don't think we can quantify. But we can say, you know, that was a life that could have been another Jonas Salk. It could have been another Einstein. Or it could have been the homeless guy with the golden voice. You don't know. And because you don't know means that you don't know, and that, two, we ought not to lightly take that kind of thing. And as I say, I don't have a problem with folks that doesn't impact in that fashion. It does me. So there you go.
Hey, you know, if it has an impact on you, great.
Yeah.
If it creates a situation where, you know, mentally, you know, you look at it and see, you know, the repercussions along, you know, through around the ways, you know, we could have lost another Hillary Clinton today or Saturday.
Yeah. Could have.
Or Lady Gaga.
Yeah. Yeah. Or a Madonna. Or, you know, whatever. Could have.
If you want to look at it in that regard, that's fine. I don't put the value, and you know this because my position's in other ways, I don't put the value on human life that you do.
Mm-hmm.
Especially as it impacts me. And there are 6 billion other opportunities, for the next Jonas Salk on this planet. And every day we've got another million people, potential Jonas Salks. If there is a God that wants another Jonas Salk, he's already preordained it, and that person is coming all along down anyway, so I'm not worried about it.
Okay. I will tell you the one thing that I will not do any longer, and that is I will no longer watch my speech and make sure that I am not impacting some crazy. I will in fact target radical politicians. I will in fact contribute to the war chest of those people, conservatives, that oppose them. And I will, in fact, annihilate them at the ballot box. And if those words are offensive, then screw you. I'm sorry. It's part of the lexicon. It's part of how we talk. It's part of who we are. It's part of what we are. And if you can't handle that, get out of the arena.
I'm done self-editing.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It doesn't do any good. I mean, God, look at... For God's sake, we've had almost murders on the Senate floor. And you're trying to tell me that this is some radical instance? It isn't. I mean, you are absolutely correct when you say, my gosh, we are probably more polite today than at any time in our history. And all you have to do to verify that is go to the morgues, interesting that we call them that, of any of the large daily newspapers, and go back to the 1800s. In the 1810s and 20s and 30s and 40s and 50s and 60s to see what people were saying. I mean, some of the things that they say would get them killed today.
The issue is, the politeness now is a false politeness. It has nothing to do with respect.
Absolutely.
You and I have talked about this. We haven't talked about it in a long time on the show, but this concept of respect.
Yes.
Not the thuggish, street version of dissing people, The simple fact that matters is that people don't respect other people.
True.
And, you know, the falseness of, you know, the concern people have for other people is not respect.
No.
It's not. It's a calculated, you know, response, you know, desiring a specific response in return.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yep.
It's, you know, calculated responses. It has nothing to do with respect whatsoever. For people that are impacted by this, great, fine. Deal with it in your own way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not interested in becoming part of the, you know, body politics conversation. So I'm done with that. And I will continue to give people 9 miles of crap online that tries to make it about things.
Mm-hmm.
Them too.
Mm-hmm.
So, somebody said something about, you know, mass murderers, and I said, well, I'm glad that you're now aware that the Muslims are mass murderers. And she said, you know, just like the Christian mass murderers. And I'm like, Christian mass murderers? Can you give me the name of one Christian mass murderer, you know, in recent times? She goes, Timothy McVeigh. I went, okay. First of all, he's agnostic. Agnostic. Second of all, he was not doing anything because of a religious point of view. You know, fail, goodbye, wrong. You know, if you want to ascribe an event to somebody, you know, that's fine. At least do so in a reasonable and rational way.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let's see if we can get off this a little bit.
Okay.
Something rather interesting happened, and you brought it up. In Massachusetts, the Massachusetts Supreme Court, which is considered a fairly respectable Supreme Court, issued an opinion that invalidated two foreclosures that actually been done, I think it was in 2005 and 2006.
Yes.
Now, somebody might say, well, what do we care about Massachusetts invalidating two foreclosures? Well, seven states have a type of foreclosure process that is basically the same as Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
And the Supreme Court found that it wasn't just wrong behavior in these two cases, but in fact was systemic failures by both banks, and in this case it actually encompassed a total of five banks in the process, that it was systemic failure to follow Massachusetts law. Not in one instance, but in multiple instances across an entire process. Now, there's going to be some question as to how Massachusetts is going to fix this problem.
Mm-hmm.
But there's at least a possibility that what Massachusetts is going to do is it's simply going to invalidate every foreclosure that has happened in the last 4 years. Now, what does that mean? Well, first of all, the people that the foreclosures have gone through and the houses have been sold to new people, those people are not going to have to give up their houses to give to the people that they were originally foreclosed on.
Right.
But what it does mean is that the banks are going to have to compensate the original homeowners.
Yes.
And it appears that that amount might be equal to the mortgage amount, which could be a pretty serious hunk of change.
Oh, yeah.
And because the Massachusetts Supreme Court has ruled so, and 37 other states have similar programs, those states, when cases get up to those state Supreme Courts, are going to be able to make pretty similar arguments. What has been interesting is that the arguments that the banks made, both at the lower court levels and at the Supreme Court level, was that they didn't have to follow the law because they were following the rules associated with trusts, you know, that were based at a federal level. Now, people say, well, see, then that's how they get around with it. Well, the problem is the Supreme Court found that while that might be true, the banks didn't follow their own rules either. They didn't follow the contract law that they were using to subvert state law.
Mm-hmm.
So not only did they find that the state law hadn't been followed, but the federal trust laws that governed the transfers weren't followed either. So the bank's reliance upon the trust law to protect them from their failures on the state law had actually been called into question, too. This could be rather big news. I was having a conversation with my mother, who lives in Illinois, and she noted that the Illinois Supreme Court had forced a bank that had foreclosed on a property and then sold the property at a profit to return the profit to the original foreclosed homeowner. Now, you might go, well, don't they always do that? And the answer is
no.
Once the house is foreclosed on, it becomes the property of the bank, and the previous owner no longer has any interest in the property. So if the bank sells it for a lot more money, the bank gets to pocket the profit. Illinois has said no. If the house sells for more than the original mortgage amount, the difference goes back to the original homeowner. That's a pretty significant change in foreclosure law also. And I'm kind of less interested in that one, only because I don't know how the Supreme Court could reach that position, because once the foreclosure happened, what interest does the owner have in the property that he should be receiving any kind of money about it? So, you know, I don't know. But what is happening is the mortgage foreclosure situation is reaching a point in legal land where banks are going to have to start eating what they have done over the last several years. And frankly, I'm quite amused by it.
Yeah, I'll bet you are.
Wisconsin, however, is not one of the 37 states that has the type of foreclosure that Massachusetts has. So there shall be no benefit to us for that. Too bad. I am trying to continue to poke and prod in Wisconsin to see if the Attorney General and the courts will get involved, because in a lot of ways, the Wisconsin issues are the same as what was raised in Massachusetts. The difference is the process is judicial in Wisconsin, and homeowners have to bring these issues up at the time of the foreclosure, or they're precluded later on from doing so.
Got it. Yeah.
The Massachusetts was non-judicial foreclosure. So that's, you know, and both of these cases were brought up after the foreclosures had already occurred. So it is a rather interesting suggestion. Interesting. All right.
Yes.
What was I going to say? Oh, there was something else that happened. Oh, speaking of Illinois, did you hear what the tax proposals have been for Illinois?
Oh, yeah, huge tax increase.
75% tax increases, income and corporate taxes. In Illinois.
Yeah.
Huge increases. I don't know why they think it's a brilliant idea, but apparently he thinks it's a brilliant idea.
Apparently.
And people are already starting to talk about recalling Quinn, who's the governor over there, for his
really?
Brilliant idea.
Ooh. Neener. All right. Okay. Yeah, The idea that states are in fact a laboratory is true. I mean, if you look at the states with the highest tax rates, combined state income tax, property tax, sales taxes, that kind of thing, what you can track is the migration from those states to states with lower tax burdens. And you find that both in individuals and businesses. So as Illinois finds out, as California finds out, it is not a real great idea to raise taxes. And yet, both of those states are apparently going to do it. Illinois has, apparently Governor Jerry Brown, Moonbeam himself, has said, well, we're going to do a one-for-one. We're going to do $12 billion of tax increases and $12 billion of program cuts. And I think what Jerry is going to find out, Illinois I think it's a done deal, but Jerry is going to find out is the voters aren't going to approve those. And so I'm hoping he's got a plan B. I don't think he does, but I'm hoping he does. And we'll see where that goes.
You know what his plan B is?
What's that?
Raise taxes.
I don't think he can anymore. Takes a two-thirds vote and a concurrence of the voters. That was one that just passed this last election cycle. So I don't think he's going to get that. So we'll see. That may in fact be his plan B, but I'm not real sure it's going to fly.
Well, he'll jump up and down and yell and scream and shut down the state.
Well, you know, that could be the best thing that happens. If you stop and think about that logically, that could be the best thing that happens. If California goes bankrupt, it does a couple of things. One, it proves the concept that yes, you can. Two, it gives you an opportunity to redo all of those public union benefits and unconscionable contracts. And in light of that, or rather not in light of that, but as another piece of that puzzle, apparently the SEC is investigating CalPERS, which is the holder of most of the benefit dollars for market manipulation and for inadequate disclosure. So if that's true, and I'm hoping that it is, we may in fact see something that we have never seen before, and that is a state that goes bankrupt, and then what the ramifications are of that. I'm hoping that it's true. I mean, that's just my own personal thing.
Well, I'm not convinced.
No, but we'll see. We'll see.
Quinn in Illinois is going to get a rude awakening. I think the people are going to be pretty pissed off at that. Apparently, Rahm Emanuel is leading in Chicago that mayor's race. Now that he's been approved that because he owned a property in Chicago, he could be a candidate,
mm-hmm.
Even though he hasn't lived there for the last 8 years.
Yep.
We talked about this in Green Room last week about the fact that things are, we know the other shoe has dropped. We've just been waiting a very long time for it to hit.
Yes, absolutely.
I think it's funny. I made a comment on Saturday before I found out about the event that China was in the process of buying Europe. Did you see that they're planning on buying something like...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, a huge amount of European bonds. Japan has gotten in on it, too. They're going to buy a whole bunch of European bonds. are we seeing the beginnings of Eurasia?
Could be.
Or Pacifica?
Yeah.
So it's going to be rather interesting. But I don't expect China to be in great shape here in the next year or so. So they might be trying to protect themselves more than helping Europe. Mm-hmm. And I think Europe is in deep.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Trouble.
Yep.
Because the euro does not have the depth and stability of the dollar. It just doesn't. As much bad as we have done with the dollar in the last couple of years, the reality is the euro is in much worse shape.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There isn't any doubt about it in my mind.
So, I'm still expecting things to go bad. The employment report was still pretty bad.
Yeah.
Despite people saying, yay, we're down to 9.4.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Almost 250,000 people less working.
Yeah, exactly.
Takes care of that.
Folks.
I'm looking for my business to continue to pick up as the year goes on.
Oh, absolutely.
So I'm seeing no hope or chance that the economy is doing any kind of rebound now or any time in the near future. And I don't expect the Republicans to be able to do anything. I can't tell you how disappointed I am in the Republicans this week. It just pissed me off. So.
Yep. We want to we've got about 4 minutes left. We want to talk about the show?
Let's talk about the show.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen,
yep.
If you like this show, it's ending in 3 weeks, unless we get some indication that people want this thing to stay going.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you what is happening. We'll do this each week. Blog Talk Radio, our hosting company, has changed the pricing structure such that starting on February 1st, unless we pay them not a significant amount of money, but for us a pricey sum every month, that we cannot have our Tuesday evening shows. We can have a half hour Monday afternoon or Wednesday morning or Thursday, midday, but no evening shows and no hours. So, if you are interested in the show continuing, you need to let us know. Otherwise, January 25th will be our last show, unless something happens on another network. And I'm not thinking that way at this point. Are you?
I'm checking it, but I'm not. I mean, it doesn't have any great allure for me.
I like this format. I like having our discussions. Having you on the show and discussing things. We're not the most popular show on the internet.
Yeah.
But we enjoy it.
Yeah, we do. Dang.
Oh. Anyways, 40 seconds left. Give me your shout-outs.
Okay. To Mama Gurkha and Arkansas Traveler and Just Be Pammy and Louisa Ma and Hallie Five. If y'all were listening, then thank you very much. We do appreciate it. Y'all need to get on Twitter and tell us what you think about the show either going on or folding up or whatever it's going to do. Because we truly do need some feedback from you. Thanks.
All right. To everyone else, we will talk next week. William, with any luck, there'll be no shootings. No depressing things going on. And Congress will be back in session, so we can have things to talk about. And I am not going to talk about Obama's speech tomorrow. That's all I have to say about that.
Hey. Okay. Super. We won't talk about. Well, no, you won't talk about his speech. That's fine. I may. We'll see what he has to say.
All right. You got something for the green room, dude?
I don't. We're good to not go if we want to do that.
All right. To everyone else that listens to the podcast, we'll check you off the next time. William, you have a good week. Enjoy your little quarter inch of snow.
Yeah, really.
And we'll talk to everyone else soon. Good night.
Good night, all.